what he thought was poison. Sanove aimed her arrow at his chest, and he drank. I explained to them they would be asleep soon. In the meantime, we were going to gag them to ensure their silence, but we reminded them there were more permanent forms of silence and we wouldn't hesitate to use them. Barr spit and mumbled under his breath, "Filthy rattan." I glanced at Sanove, her hand hovering over her knife. A tremor ruffled her eyelids, like 1,000 barbed switches were shaking behind them, and I wondered if Barr was better left here with his throat slit than facing the agonies she planned for him. 40 minutes, Natia said. We were ahead of schedule. It was only a short walk down the covered terrace walkway to the back gate, where the hay wagon and horses were waiting. I pulled the gag from Phineas. The plans for the weapons, where are they? The captain moaned beneath his gag, furiously shaking his head. Sarva and the others had similar responses, still trying to preserve their treasures. Phineas hesitated, listening to their groans. I shrugged. Who do you think you should listen to? Them or us? Every one of our weapons was trained on him. The second outbuilding near the gate, he responded. It's our workshop. All the formulas are there. It was on our way. The gods were watching over us. Before I stepped out onto the terrace, I pointed to the row of throwing knives on our chests in case they got any foolish ideas about fleeing in the darkness. I wouldn't try to make a run for it. Tell them what rattan means, Cardos. He mumbled beneath his gag. That's right. Never fail. Got that, Captain? He nodded, an angry line creasing the crescent scar on his forehead. I stepped out onto the terrace. The grounds beyond were black with a moonless night. If there was a stray guard who wasn't in a birch wing's sleep by now, he would not see us. The air was still, not so much as the ripple of a breeze, and the only sound was the warble of a thrush answering Wren's call. We made our way down the stairs to the grassy grounds that led to the gate. The six men shuffling between the others, silent and afraid, as I walked ahead, scouting our path. We were halfway to the gate when I heard a rustle. It was too dark here to signal, so I whistled, a low warble to stop them. Another rustle. And then the sky lit up like dawn.
Chapter 51. Kazi.
Positions! I yelled. In less than a second, we had our prisoners knocked to their knees. Sanove, Eben, and Atia stood behind them with arrows drawn, and Ren's zeith circled around the captain's neck. I was 12 feet in front of them all, with a dagger gripped in my hand. The smell of sulfur burned the air, and my eyes adjusted to the sudden blinding flames of 100 torches in the night. And then I saw Jace. He was standing in front of me, only steps away, blocking my path. His family stood behind him, Verlin, Priya, Gunner, Titus, Mason, Aram, Samuel, even Jelaine. Their expressions were condemning, hurt, seething. The grounds were thick with guards, their arrows aimed, and Straza with swords drawn. Jace's eyes glistened, his head shaking, looking like he'd been kicked in the stomach. His mouth opened, but he struggled to find words.
This?
He finally asked, holding up a canister of white crystals.
Is this what you meant to get?
He switched the birch wings? His whole family had played along, even Jelaine. That was what Jace's last-minute whisper in her ear was. You knew, I said.
Not for sure. I didn't want to believe it.
He threw the canister, and it shattered somewhere in the darkness. He looked back at Eben and Atia, the cook and her husband now revealed as Rattan, too.
You were planning this all along.
His eyes cut through me, accusing.
That's all this was ever about?
By this, I knew he meant we. My anger flared. He had harbored ruthless killers, conspired with them, lied about them, used me to lure the queen here. I was the one who was betrayed. He had no right to reproach me. My next words were sharp, trying to cut him loose.
That's right. That's all it was ever about. These men are under our arrest for murder and treason, and you're guilty of harboring them. Now step aside before we arrest you too.
He blew out a disbelieving breath.
Have you lost your mind? Look where you are. You're surrounded. Put your weapons down now,
he ordered. We didn't move. Bows pulled tighter, stretching with more threat on both sides. Poised arms shook. The tension grew more taut with every passing second. Shouting erupted.
You're not taking them anywhere, Titus bellowed. You're trespassing in Ballinger territory. You'll pay for this, Aram sneered.
We're a sovereign domain, Priya yelled. Your queen has no jurisdiction at Tor's Watch, and you definitely don't.
You're our prisoners now. Drop your weapons,
Mason shouted, his sword drawn. Our captives screamed through their gags. Save this, Kazi. Somehow save this.
Move aside, Jace. Now.
Please, I don't want to hurt you.
I stepped forward, and more swords sliced free from scabbards. Jace looked around at the growing tension.
Hold your weapons,
he yelled, and he held his hand up in a stopping motion toward me.
Don't move, Kazi. You're going to get yourself killed. You're going to get your friends killed. Let them shoot, Jace, Titus yelled. They're outnumbered.
And we were, by far.
Shut up, Jace yelled over his shoulder and turned back to me. Put it down, Kazi. There's nowhere for you to go. We need these men. We have an agreement with them for...
There's nothing that will make me give them back to you, Jace. Nothing.
If we die, they die with us. And the scholars will die first.
I was in the way of most of their shots. I would go down first, but there would be time for the others to slit our captives' throats. The scholars moaned beneath their gags. Jace's gaze locked on mine. There was no going back, but I still saw pleading in his eyes. For these men? He slowly edged closer as if I wouldn't notice.
Give me your knife, he demanded.
I'm asking you one last time. Step aside.
I can't do that, Kazi. Everything we've said is true. We're the law here, not you or your queen.
He took another step closer, his hand still outstretched.
There are 30 guards with their arrows aimed and a lot of nervous Straza. Someone's going to make a mistake, and one of you will...
And then there was a shout in the darkness from Gunner.
This is what you really want, isn't it? He called. We'll trade.
Gunner stepped forward, his arm crooked around a man's neck. The man struggled beneath Gunner's grip, and our gazes met. Shiny onyx eyes looked back into mine. My chest burned. The air vanished. My dagger shook in my hand. I heard Jace shouting, Gunner, no! More shouting, but it all seemed far away. Kazi. Kazi.
Where is the brat?
Time spun. Sweat trickled down my back. Torches flickered and all I could see was golden light bouncing off walls. My mother reaching for a stick.
Come out, girl.
Here. He was here. How was that even possible? It was as if no time had passed. He looked the same. Fear swelled in my throat. My knees became hot liquid. You're not powerless anymore. He was mine. Mine for a simple trade, for a worthless captain and his cohorts.
know what is at stake, Kazimaira. I need you. Justice for thousands, or justice for one? My feet were on two different paths, my insides splitting, tumbling in two directions. The Pervisi driver spotted the dagger in my hand and struggled to get away. I heard Mason call him Zane. They knew him. He had a name. Zane. Both Mason and Gunner were holding him now. He had seen the murder in my eyes. It fueled me, wanting him even more, a hungry, thirsty, ravenous need to spill his blood a drop at a time.
What happened to her?
I called.
What did you do to my mother?
The question came out quiet, halting and unexpected. The sound turned my stomach to ice. I heard the voice of the child I used to be. The man called Zane looked at me as if he knew he had no chance. He opened his mouth to speak, but Gunner clapped his hand over it and shoved him into someone else's arms behind him.
Trade first, then you get your answers.
I stared at Gunner, wishing him dead, my rage so hot I could have torn him in two with my bare hands, but at the same time I was paralyzed. I might as well have had a sword slicing into my soul. The man who had haunted me for my whole life was here, and Jace knew. He knew his name. He had known all along. I looked at him. I didn't need to say it. I knew he could see it in my eyes. This? You lied about this, too? He stepped closer.
Kazzie, I was—
Make a choice, Kazzie. There was only one choice. I had to give one thing up to gain another. Jace lunged toward me, but I was expecting it. I knew things, too. Things like the moment a thief closes in on their mark. It's always when they are at their weakest. I kicked him to his knees and yanked his hair, pulling his head back with one hand and pressing my knife snug against his throat with my other. A quick sleight of hand, a dance, a swift, practiced movement that had kept me alive for years, maybe just for this moment.
I gave you a chance, I said between gritted teeth.
I leaned closer to his ear.
I gave you every chance.
I pulled his hair back a little harder, pressed the knife a little closer.
Now tell them to move away. Step back, Jace said carefully.
Even speaking was risky with the blade so tight against his skin.
She'll do it, he warned. She'll cut my throat. You heard him, I yelled. The Patre is going with us.
Everyone was shouting now, yelling for me to let go, telling me the horrible things they were going to do to me. I didn't know if Zane was among them anymore. My throwing knife. Why didn't I throw it while I had the chance? Because too much was at stake. Too many crowded around him. A stray knife could have sent everything spinning out of control. My logic battled with my hunger. I didn't throw the knife because Zane wasn't my mission, and returning criminals to the Queen was.
Up, I ordered and moved my knife to the base of Jace's skull.
I know every vulnerable spot on your body. No more tricks. Lace your hands behind your head. Slowly. He did as I instructed, and I began guiding him toward the gate with my crew following close behind. Jace's family, Straza, and guards with their arrows still aimed followed on the sidelines, just waiting for an opportunity.
You won't get away with this, Kazzie, Jace said as we walked. How long can you keep a knife pressed to my neck? The minute you drop your hand, they'll kill you.
11 years, Jace. I can keep it here for 11 years if I have to.
We can still work something out. Shut up. Save your stories for Zane.
As we passed an outbuilding, I ordered Sanove to shoot a fire arrow through the window. It hit the rear wall and lit up the interior. Stacks of papers were scattered on a work table. The captain strained against Ren's grip, groaning and trying to work his gag free.
"What are you doing?" Gunner yelled. "Kazi, don't," Jace pleaded. "We have too much invested."
"Do it," I ordered. Sanove shot another fire arrow, this one shattering a kerosene lamp on the table, and the room ignited in flames. I heard the groans, the cursing, damning us all to hell, and saw the furor in the captain's eyes. I felt the rage rolling off Jace.
"Open the gates," I said to Drake and Tiago.
They looked to Jace for confirmation. He nodded. The hay wagon and horses were still there, not yet returned to the stables. They didn't expect us to get this far. Natia and Eben were methodical, chaining each man to the rail inside the wagon, more orders being shouted, this time from Mason. He was calling for horses from the stables. They intended to follow us. There wasn't room in the back of the wagon for both Jace and me, and I needed to stay with him. My knife at his neck was all that was keeping us alive. I ordered him up on the front seat.
"Drive, Patre. We are going to see the Queen."
Chapter 52. Jace.
The horizon turned from black to misty blue. The stars of Hetisha's chariot retreated. The sun was coming up. "The horses need to rest," I said. "I'll tell you when the horses need to rest." "All right then, I need to rest." And I did. I ached. My shoulders, my back, my head, my eyes. I wasn't sure how much longer I could keep them open and focused. "Tell your family to go home, and then we can all rest." We had stopped for an hour during the night to water the horses, but there had been no rest for us. My family, Straza, and guards circled around, torches blazing, waiting for Kazi to let up, make a mistake, succumb to fatigue or their taunts. She didn't. Not even when Sarva and the others started in. Once their gags were removed so they could drink, they were relentless. I knew what they were doing, trying to provoke her, trying to get her to lose her concentration and turn toward them so I could disarm her. But they went too far.
"Bet that Zane had a real fine time with your mother," Barr sneered. Then Sarva began to describe the things he would have done to her.
"Shut up, Sarva," I yelled. He said things I wouldn't say to save my life. I felt Cassie's arm quiver against my back, but the blade stayed steady over my shoulder, her eyes frozen on the dark trail ahead. I thought she'd waver or collapse by now, at least doze off as the wagon rumbled through the darkness and tedious miles. She wouldn't tell me where we were going. Her crew, who rode nearby, wouldn't tell me either. Right now we were headed south, but I figured we were going to cut east soon. "Are we going all the way to Venda?"
"None of your concern."
She had barely uttered a word to me, and the ones she had were hostile. I knew she must be exhausted too. She slumped beside me, but her knife was still in slashing range of my throat. I blinked, trying to shake off the fatigue. I heard snores from behind us. At least someone was getting sleep. I tugged on the reins.
"Whoa!"
Cassie sat up straight. "What do you think you're doing?" "Telling them to go home." Ren, Sanove, Eben, and Natia circled, defending the wagon as Mason, Gunner, and the others rode closer.
"Go home, Gunner," I called. "Take everyone with you. Watch over the town until I return."
Mason rode his horse close to Sanove's, trying to intimidate her, his eyes dark and angry.
"We're not leaving without you," he called back.
"Yes, you are." I told them that somewhere ahead there would be troops waiting, and I couldn't afford for all of them to be taken into custody, too. We were leaving the arena and everything else at risk. Mother, Nash, and Lydia couldn't manage it alone. The rest of them needed to be there to keep things going and safe until I got back. My assertion that I'd be back rested in their eyes like a question. Gunner grimaced, but finally nodded. He knew I was right.
"We'll keep it going."
He signaled the rest to follow him as he turned back in the direction of home. Priya rode up boldly to the wagon. Ren moved to block her path, but Priya still made eye contact with Cassie.
I warned you that I'd make you regret it if you hurt my brother. You will. This will never be forgotten. Ever. You'll pay for this.
Cassie didn't respond. She just met Priya's icy glare with a steady gaze. Priya looked at me, her expression filled with worry.
Be safe, brother.
I will, I answered, and she turned and rode off. When they were far enough away, Cassie lowered her knife and got down from the wagon. I followed and let myself collapse on the ground, my back pressing against the uneven earth, my muscles twitching. Cassie and her crew took care of the horses and their captives in the back of the wagon, then took turns standing watch and sleeping themselves. Everyone was exhausted, except for maybe Beaufort and the rest, who I had heard snoring during the night. I dozed and slept in fits, and I wondered what hell I was in that for the second time since my father died, I was a prisoner being hauled somewhere against my will. We were given rations of water and dried beef, and when Bar was unchained so he could go relieve himself, Zenove taunted him, saying he should make a run for it while he could. I think he considered it for a moment, but he had no weapon and there was nowhere to run. The terrain was mostly flat now, with only a few distant groves to offer anywhere to hide. I leaned up against the wagon wheel, chewing on my dry slice of beef, staring at Cassie, wondering what was going on in her head. She saw me watching her and looked away. I remembered what the seer had told me.
Guard your heart, Patre. I see a knife hovering, ready to cut it out.
I realized now it wasn't the raiders she had meant. She was warning me about Cassie. She suddenly whipped around, her eyes blazing.
Stop it, she ordered. Stop looking at me.
Or what? I answered. What are you going to do, Cassie? What's left that you could possibly do to me? Since there was no room in the back of the wagon for me, I continued to drive it. But Cassie now rode alongside on Misha, apparently too repulsed to even sit on the wagon seat beside me. With my family and their threat gone, she could sufficiently guard me from a distance. Even that didn't last long. She traded positions with Ren and fell back with Eben and Natia, our so-called cooks turned captors. I shook my head, thinking about Dark Cottage and its history, and the murderous lover who was brought into the fortress in the middle of the night by a Ballinger himself. When did you become so stupid, Jelaine? My own angry words flew back in my face like a well-aimed fist. I gave you a chance. I gave you every chance. She did. Why didn't I step aside? Why didn't I just let her go? It wasn't only because I wanted to keep our investment safe. Tension was high, tempers higher, all of it about to spin out of control. I had been afraid. I was afraid she'd be killed. When did you become so stupid, Jace? She invaded my family, my home. With every mile we traveled, my anger grew, not just at Cassie and her crew, but also at the Queen herself, for ordering soldiers into my realm, on my land, behind my walls. It was an invasion into my territory. If I had done the same, it would be considered an act of war, and I would be facing a noose.
You were pretty slow-footed back there, weren't you, Patre?
I looked at Ren. She eyed me with that lethal stare of hers. Go torment someone else. Surprisingly, she did. She rode ahead with Zenove. No doubt it was she who'd be keeping a close eye on me next. It wasn't as if I could go anywhere. My team of horses could never outrun them. And if I tried, my back would be a sure target for one of Sinove's arrows.
We can take them,
Beaufort said when he realized no one was there to hear. I looked back at him over my shoulder. No, I answered. They're armed, and they're Ratan. Sarva's lip lifted in a snarl.
But they still have soft skulls, like anyone else.
Bar lifted his shackled wrists,
Next time they unchain us to leak our lizards, we grab a rock and bash in their heads.
We're not bashing in heads, I said.
Easy for you to say, Cardos jeered. You don't know their queen. She'll have all our heads on pikes before we can say hello, including yours.
He's right, Beaufort said.
She has a vicious streak, and a vendetta against anyone who defied her.
You all fought against her?
Except for the scholars,
Sarva answered. As usual, the scholars remained silent. They both seemed terrified.
The rest of us fought with the Komizar, Barr said. Now that man was a real leader.
The man who chopped off children's fingers? I had heard rumors about him, that he was 12 feet tall, that his sword was made from the teeth of dragons, that he was an ancient who had survived the centuries, that he wasn't really slain because it was impossible to slay a man who was part god. The stories surrounding him were as embellished as the ones that explained the stars in the sky. By the time information reached Hell's Mouth, it was hard to tell fact from myth. Even Barr's first-hand account seemed more myth than truth.
No one disobeyed his commands. He could silence the devil with a whisper.
His cruel punishment of children was the only story that didn't feel like myth. I remembered Cassie's eyes when she flung her fingers up in front of me. Look at my fingers, Jace. Take a good, long look. In that moment, her eyes told me everything. I saw the desperate life she'd been forced to live. Zenove had caught some game, a small antelope, and its split carcass sizzled over a spit. We were camped in a copse of spirit trees that sprouted up among ruins. Trees walked up circular staircases and perched in windows like thin ghosts. Barr didn't seem so brave about bashing in heads now. His head turned at every rustle, and I doubted he'd want to step alone into the dark to leak anything now. I was chained to a tree. We all were. I had a shackle around my ankle once again. Cassie was off tending Nisha. She managed to avoid me all day, which took some effort since we were headed in the same direction. Natia reached over the fire and split the ribs of the antelope to help it cook faster. Hungry? I asked. Are you still eating for two? Or maybe it's eight by now. Your lies seem to multiply like maggots.
Watch your mouth, Patre,
Eben warned, brandishing his knife. At least that much of what Natia had said was true. He was good with a knife.
Just eating for myself,
she answered, cheerfully patting her flat stomach. Your queen never intended to come, did she? She's not just an invader, but a liar, too.
I said watch your mouth,
Eben snapped. Her letter was a farce, I snarled. My letter to her was a farce, Cassie answered. All our heads turned. She stepped out of the shadows into the light of the fire. And the queen knew it. I gave her ample clues, ones you and your brothers didn't see. Golden Thanis? It's poison. I asked her to bring you a gift of poison. Her tone was thick with sarcasm. I would never have asked her to come to Tor's Watch. She said it with scorn, like my home was beneath the queen. I stared at her. From the very beginning, everything was a lie. Was there ever anything truthful about you? She met my gaze.
You will not lecture me about truth. Ever.
I was under no obligation to tell you about family business.
Business? That's what you call it? Stockpiling an arsenal of weapons?
Yes, that is our business, and we had every right to put all the kingdoms under your thumb, to put a rope around the queen's neck. There you go with your Venden embellishments again. You were hiding known fugitives, and you were back, both of you. Eben came between us, pushing us apart, our chests still heaving. I hadn't realized I had stood up or that she had stepped so close we were screaming inches from each other. She glared at me, her breaths still coming in gasps.
The queen is not a liar. She couldn't submit to your thinly veiled demand to come to Tor's Watch because she's confined to her bed. She can't travel.
or I promise you she would be here to take this scum back to face justice herself. Her eyes glistened. Don't ever talk to me about truth again. Her voice was broken, shaky. She turned on her heel and disappeared back into the shadows.
Chapter 53, Kazi.
I stooped at the creek's edge, filling the last water skin. Broken stone walls jutted up from the landscape around me. I had been grateful for the ruins last night and the dark cave they gave me to sleep in away from everyone else. It was likely the last shelter we would have for a while. I corked the full water skin, and when I stood and turned, Eben was there watching me.
I'll help you with those, he said.
He gathered 5 skins up in his arms, paused, and looked at me again.
You all right?
It wasn't like Eben to ask a question like that. You had to be all right. Always.
What do you mean?
He looked at me hesitantly.
That was him back there?
Him. My blood rushed a little faster. Now I understood. Of all his secrets, how could Jace have not told me this? He knew what Zane had done.
Yes, I answered. That was him.
Eben's lip lifted in disgust.
The bastard. But you did the right thing, Kazi. I know it wasn't easy for you to leave him behind. There will be another chance. We'll go back.
I shook my head. No, Eben. We both know he won't be there. By then he'll be long gone, hiding in some other faraway hole. I can't spend another 11 years looking for him.
I'm sorry.
No need to be sorry, I said, trying to force cheer into my voice. Instead, my words came out wooden. Look at the other bastards we caught. The one we set out for and a bonus of 5.
6, he corrected. What about the Patre?
I swallowed. Yes, 6. The Patre too. But there was something I needed to tell Eben. Something I had to tell them all, including Jace. It was the laughter. It had always been the laughter that needled through me, a repeated stitch that surfaced over and over again. Laughter reveals in the same way a sigh or a glance does. It's an unintentional language. Worry, fear, deceit. They hide in the things unsaid. Something about the laughter hadn't felt right that first night I discovered the captain and the others in the enclave. But the shock of their words had overshadowed it. Last night, when I had disappeared into the shadows, I heard it again. All of them laughing, thinking Jace had gotten the better of me. That he had driven me away. It wasn't laughter filled with merriment. It was filled with smug derision. The kind I remembered hearing from merchants when they tricked someone into paying more than they should. The kind of laughter that always came later, after their sucker was gone. It was that kind of laughter I'd heard that first night when I heard them discussing the Ballingers. It wasn't a laughter of mirth, but of mockery. The captain and his cohorts had been laughing at the Ballingers. Was it a double cross? A betrayal? Thanks to the Ballingers, our riches will only become greater. Was Alarion using them? The Queen had said he was an average swordsman and commander, but he's an above-average deceiver. His skill is in his patience. Just as he had played 2 roles at the Citadel in Morrigan, had he played 2 roles at Tor's Watch? The role he wanted Jace's family to see, and his hidden role to benefit himself. I was certain the Ballingers had been duped. Let's be honest, Kazi, Natia said when I gathered them at the creek's edge to tell them my suspicion. Are you sure you're not just seeing the things you want to see because you still care for Jace? That's over, I answered. Some betrayals run too deep. His lie about Zane left me raw, and I saw the bitterness in his eyes, too, when he caught me at the Enclave. Our mutual betrayals had shattered anything we once had. I shook my head. This isn't about Jace and me. It's about knowing the truth. Setting a trap for the Queen? Jace's dismissal of the accusation was swift and genuine. I know that much about him. You thought other things about him were genuine too, Ren said. I sat down on the tumbled wall at the creek's edge, trying to sort it out. What was real and what was false. But I knew what I'd heard, and the thirst for revenge against the Queen had been thick in Illyrian's voice. Jace would have nothing to gain from it. Putting a noose around the Queen's neck was the captain's agenda, I said. For him, it's as much about revenge as riches. When he joined forces with the Komizar, he'd hoped to become a wealthy man, and instead the Queen made him a hunted one. And putting all the kingdoms under his thumb? Jace's world is Hell's Mouth, Tor's Watch, the Arena, and that's it. He doesn't want more than that. I looked to Ren, Sinove, for confirmation. You both know. They nodded. Even if it was a double cross, that still doesn't exonerate the Ballingers, Natia countered. Eben agreed. They were hiding known fugitives for what they thought were their own purposes. Weapons. And that was the crux of it. The one thing we couldn't ignore. To be accurate, the Ballingers only hid one fugitive, Ren corrected. Even we didn't know the others were alive, and there was no warrant for them. Harboring just one fugitive is enough to charge him with conspiracy, Natia said. The Alliance of Kingdoms is very clear on that. It's in the treaties. We'll have to leave it to the Queen to decide his fate. Eben and Natia left to start loading the prisoners back in the wagon. Today we would rendezvous with Grizz and the troops who would escort us the rest of the way. When are you going to tell Jace? Ran asked. Before we leave, I want him to know before we reach Sentinel Valley. Sinove frowned, swishing her bare feet through the shallow water. You can't let him drive the wagon once he knows. He might drive the whole bunch of them off into a gorge. Bar will not be going that way. Ren and I both eyed her suspiciously. I had seen her watching Bar, hunger in her expression. She had taunted him to make a run for it more than once. How will he be going, Sinove? I asked. She hopped out of the water, splashing us both. However the Queen chooses, of course, she answered and walked away, saying she was going to help with the prisoners. She's right about the wagon, Ren said. He'll try something. The Ballingers don't take betrayal well. How well I knew that. Priya had already pledged her revenge on me in multiple ugly ways. I was probably the number one criminal listed on a warrant in Hell's Mouth by now. We'll chain his leg to the footbed, I said. Jace takes his role of patre too seriously to take his own life. And that way he wouldn't be able to jump over the seat and attack them either. I had seen what his fist was capable of. He wouldn't be here at all if he'd stepped aside like you ordered. And then he all but let you take him down to use as a shield. I'm not sure we'd have gotten out of there otherwise. Every one of those Ballingers had blood in their eyes. What? That's crazy. I took him by surprise. He knows your tricks by now. I don't think he was surprised. And I saw him at the settlement, wrestling with his brothers. He's quick. Even so, I know what happened, and you were behind me where you couldn't see as well. She shrugged. Maybe so. But some things you can see better from a distance.
Chapter 54. Jace.
Is this the point where I'm supposed to plead for my life? While Eben and Natia loaded the other prisoners into a wagon, Ren and Sanove led me into the forest, then tied me to a tree.
Could be, Ren said. Just be quiet and listen.
Listen to what? They turned and left, and I wondered if the plan was to leave me here to rot or to be eaten by a Kandok. Minutes later, I heard rustling behind me. Human footsteps. Not Kandok. I wasn't sure it worried me any less. Kazi came into view. She stood in front of me and told me she wanted me to listen and not say a single word. There were things I needed to hear. She'd gag me if she had to. You can spare me another lecture on being a thief.
I said not a word.
I fumed, strained against the rope that held me. You have a true captive audience. I didn't say another word. She paced in front of me as she spoke, trying to convince me I had been played by Beaufort. Her voice held no emotion, and her eyes were just as detached.
Let me give you the particulars of his crimes.
She told me Beaufort had been a trusted member of the Moragis cabinet, a man of wealth and position, but he wanted more, and conspired with the Commissar to get it. She went into great detail, his crimes ranging from infiltrating the Moragis citadel with enemy soldiers, to poisoning the king, to planning an attack that killed the crown prince. My mind ticked over the details she threw at me, taking in her version and Beaufort's. Two scenarios, two possible lies, two possible truths. She continued to pace, her demeanor void of emotion, except for her hands tapping a tense dance against her thighs.
Did I mention the 32 young soldiers who also died in the massacre he orchestrated? He was only warming up at that point. His crimes go on from there. You'll see soon enough.
I realize you didn't know about the other men, she continued.
Torbak and Phineas are Moragis scholars who are able to decipher the secrets of the ancients and bring them to life again.
They're traitors too. They made vows to serve the gods, but instead they serve themselves. She told me that Sarva, Cardos, and Bar were Vendin. Everyone thought they died on the battlefield. There were so many charred bodies it was hard to tell, but some of their personal effects were found. They obviously staged their deaths before they ran. She said Cardos was a general in the Commissar's army who used children as young as Lydia and Nash on his front lines. It was his method of unnerving enemy soldiers before he moved his cavalry forward. Sarva was the governor of a Vendin province, and Bar a sanctum guard. She said they led an attack against unarmed citizens, butchering them on the streets. Whole families died. Children, parents, grandparents. One of those families was Ren's. She held her father as he died in her arms. And Sanove watched Bar behead both of her parents. She had no choice but to run, because he came after her too. She was 10 years old. She turned to face me. These are the men you gave sanctuary to, the ones who promised to make you weapons. What did you want them for, Jace? To protect Hell's Mouth? The arena? I can assure you they had much bigger plans. You'll see just how big later today. I heard them reveling in the fact that they would have the kingdoms under their thumbs soon, that the great battle would look like a spring picnic. The captain's plans were for domination. The Ballingers were a lucky stepping stone for them, their means to an end. They laughed about it. They mocked you. I'm guessing they planned to kill your whole family once you gave them everything they needed, which apparently was supplies for weapons. Who better to acquire the raw materials than a wealthy family who has access to everything through the arena? I heard them laugh about the arsenal that they'd soon have. Them, not you. It wouldn't be the first time Captain Ilarion has done something like this. But you knew when you hit a fugitive in order to get what you wanted that you were taking a risk. She stopped pacing and stared at me as if she was waiting for something. Well? Oh, I have permission to speak now? She nodded. My gaze locked onto hers, and I spoke slowly, so each word had time to sink in. Let me see if I have this straight. What you're telling me is they infiltrated Tor's Watch under false pretenses. They violated my family's trust. They put them at risk, ate our food, slept in our beds. They used us. They made promises they had no intention of keeping. They betrayed us. She swallowed, my point made. So tell me, how are they different from you? She looked at me like I had slapped her face. I wouldn't have killed you, Jace. I wouldn't have butchered your family. Can you say the same for them? You intended to poison my family. You thought you were putting birch wings in our food. It's not a poison and you know it. It's only a sedative. Nash and Lydia are children. I don't care what it is. We didn't put it in their food. And yet, Beaufort and his men never even did that much to us. Yet, we're an independent realm, the first country, and you violated our sovereignty. Who am I supposed to believe? A Ratan soldier who dishonored my family's trust? Who mocked me? Or the word of a queen I've never met who seized land that was ours? You have no borders, Jace. The land was in the Cam Lanto. She chose it based on what the king told her. How was she to know? So that excuse worked for her, but not for me? I didn't know what Beaufort's crimes were beyond a tattered bill that he refuted. All you had to do was ask. We did! My father asked the king's magistrate, who said he had no information about him. Then you should have asked the queen. The queen who doesn't answer our letters? The queen who doesn't even know we exist? You hid him, Jace. That says everything. She paused, her eyes drilling into mine. You hid a lot of things. Which crime am I really here for, Cassie? Hiding Beaufort or hiding Zane? Her lip quivered. She turned and walked away, saying over her shoulder, Ren and Sanove will come back to get you. I strained against the ropes, crazy thoughts running through my head, thoughts that made no sense. Cassie, wait! I called. She stopped, and for long seconds looked down at the ground. I was going to tell you about Zane, I said. I swear I was. She spun to face me. When, Jace? When I took your ring, I gave it back to you when it mattered. When it helped you save everything you cared about. You had the chance to tell me about Zane. When it mattered to me. But you didn't. She left. And I wished there had been anger in her voice, or misery in her eyes, or something. Instead, there was nothing. Vast, empty plains of nothing. And it hit me harder than if she had struck me in the jaw again.
The wind. Time. They circle. Repeat. Teaching us to be ever watchful. For freedoms are never won once and for all, but must be won over and over again. Song of Jezalia. Chapter 55. Cassie.
Take a good long look and remember the lives lost. Real people that someone loved. Before you go about the task I have given you, see the devastation and remember what they did. What could happen again? Know what is at stake. Dragons eventually wake and crawl from their dark dens. We stood at the mouth of Sentinel Valley, and I knew. I had done at least one right thing. Even justice couldn't erase scars. It only delivered on a promise to the living that evil would not go unpunished. And maybe it also delivered hope that evil could be stopped for good. That promise bloomed now, in the sky, the soil, the wind. The spirits whispered to me. My mother whispered to me. Shh, Cassie, listen. Hear the language that isn't spoken, for everyone can hear spoken words.
but only a few can hear the heart that beats behind them. I heard the heart of the valley, the beat that still swelled through it.
No! Barr cried. I'm not going down there, no!
As soon as he spotted our destination, he began yanking against his chains. Sarva and Cardos blustered similar protests. Some soldiers believed deserters could be sucked into the underworld, the dead recognizing their footfalls and reaching up through the earth to pull them under.
You'll go and you'll walk the whole length, if you make it that far, Sinove said, wanting to add to his suffering.
It would slow us down, but we'd promised Sinove that the long ride would be the best torture she could inflict, and this much agony Barr was owed. Even the captain, who had no such Venden superstitions, seemed to pale at the prospect of returning to the site of the infamous battle he had helped orchestrate. Phineas bent over and puked, and he hadn't even seen anything yet. Jace alone looked on with curiosity. He had never been here before. His eyes skimmed the towering cliffs, the ruins that sat upon them, and the peculiar green mounds of grass that rose up in the distance. Eben drove the wagon behind us, and Natia and Ren rode beside him, ready to shoot or cut down anyone who made an errant move other than walking straight ahead. Sinove and I walked on either side of the prisoners. For at least a mile in, no one spoke. For some of us, the valley demanded reverence. But for others, like Barr, I was sure they feared a noise might wake the dead. A shadow passed overhead, and Barr fell to the ground, frantically looking up, his nerves unraveling. Circling high above us were two Raka, probably wishing we were antelope. Sinove smiled when she saw them. Move along, she ordered, motioning with her sword. Cardos eyed a decaying wagon, looking desperate, ready to pry anything loose to use as a weapon. Maybe he heard the voices too, or maybe he felt the dead clawing at his feet. The wind rustled, the grass moving in waves, like a message being passed. They're coming. Jace stopped at the bones of a Brezalot, its giant bleached ribs pointing like spears to the sky.
What is it?
He asked. Brezalots were not found on this part of the continent. Similar to horses, I explained. Majestic, giant creatures, for the most part wild and unstoppable. But the Komizar managed to subvert their beauty and turn them into weapons. Hundreds of them died here, too. Halfway in, we saw a rock memorial. A tattered white shirt on top of it, waving in the breeze. I watched Jace take it all in. The mass graves, the scattered human bones dug up by beasts, the rusted and abandoned weapons thick with grass, the occasional skull grinning up at the cliffs. His eyes were dark clouds sweeping from one side to the other.
How many died?
He asked. 20,000. In one day. But as Sarva mentioned, this was just a spring picnic compared with what they had planned. He didn't say anything, but his jaw was rigid. He turned, looking long and hard at Sarva, the same kind of hunger in his eyes as I saw in Sinove's when she looked at Barr. Cardos suddenly screamed, his foot falling into the soil up to his knee. He scrambled away and looked back. It was only a collapsed burrow, but they all looked at it with horror, even the captain, waiting for a bony hand to emerge. Yes, this was a torture of their own making. As we neared the end of the valley, we spotted riders coming toward us. I noticed the captain visibly brighten, but then he cursed. They were Moragi's troops. A low shudder rolled through Torbak.
It began with the stars,
Phineas suddenly blurted out. I turned and looked at him. His eyes were glazed, his expression lost.
It was the Tembris that showed us. The stars brought a...
Shut up!
The captain ordered.
Why?
Phineas asked.
What difference does it make now? We're all going to die anyway.
What do you mean, it began with the stars? I asked.
Quiet!
Torbak yelled.
We're not going to die,
Barr growled.
There's still time.
It's too late, Phineas said. It's too late for all of us.
He looked at Jace.
I'm sorry. There never was a fever cure. He knew what would make you listen. I tried to.
Stupid bastard!
Sarva lunged toward him. A warning arrow hissed through the air, but at the same time, Barr lunged toward Phineas too, his fist jamming into his gut. Ren, Sinove, and I moved swiftly, knocking Barr and Sarva to their stomachs and pressing swords to their backs. Eben and Atiya knocked arrows, ordering Jace, Torbak, Cardos, and the captain down on their knees. Phineas stood frozen, his mouth open, his eyes wide as if terrified by the sudden swirl of commotion. But then I saw a trickle of blood on the front of his shirt. He dropped to his knees, still unable to speak. I left Barr face down, ordering him not to move, and went to Phineas just as he fell forward. A giant Brezalot rib protruded from his back. I looked over at the captain, who had been directly behind Phineas. His expression was smug and remorseless. We were prepared for them to attack us, but not one another. I rolled Phineas to his side and pulled him up into my arms. His face was splotched with tears.
I'm sorry,
he gasped, every word an effort.
The olives, the casks.
He coughed, blood seeping from his mouth.
The room where you found me, the papers.
He let out a long, wheezing breath.
What about the papers?
I said.
Destroy them. Make sure.
His lips stilled. His chest stilled. But his eyes remained frozen on me, still afraid. The captain didn't look smug now. I saw the sweat bead on his upper lip as the king approached. We had arrived at the encampment just outside the southern entrance to the valley. The queen's brother, Bryn, was the newly crowned king of Morrigan, his father having passed last year. He walked toward us, leaning heavily on his cane. He was a young man, robust and healthy, but he'd lost his lower right leg in the attempt on his life. With every labored step, the king had a reminder of the captain's treachery. We had the prisoners lined up for inspection, but the king approached me first. Your Majesty, I said, bowing. Ren and Sinove did the same. He stopped us mid-bow, reaching out and touching my shoulder.
No, he said. I should be the one bending a knee to all of you. I would, but I might not get up again.
He was without pretense, much like his sister. He smiled. I knew he was trying to pretend this moment wasn't affecting him as much as it was. He was a handsome man, but old for his years. The queen said he had once been her humorous brother, the prankster she often got into trouble with as a child. There was no humor in his eyes anymore. His family had been decimated. He told me he would be leaving 20 soldiers with us as escort and support, and then walked with me down the line of prisoners, looking at each one as I told him who they were and what they had done. First Cardos, Sarva, and Barr, and then we came to Torbak. He had actually been one of the king's tutors when he was a child.
You found a full snake's nest. We didn't know about him.
He stared at Torbak for a long while, and when Torbak buckled under the heat of his scrutiny, babbling for his life, the king silenced him. There was another scholar, I explained. The captain murdered him on the way here.
So I heard, he said. Phineas was hardly more than a boy himself when he disappeared from Morrigan. The conspiracy was a long time in the planning.
He stepped in front of the captain, his scrutiny searing. As you well know, Captain Alarion, the one thing you will get that my brothers and thousands of others didn't is justice.